growing country like India, it's absolutely essential for people to understand financial markets, because that's where the financial wealth will be created. And without using technology, without being going digital, it's not possible to spread this to a large extent. So we started this digital platform called eLearn Markets with 300 plus market experts, hundreds of webinars, hundreds of courses on the platform, and multiple other ways of learning now available, which is now utilized by more than 3.5 million users.
Listeners, welcome back to another episode of Economically Yours. I'm your host, Charmi Shah, and today I have with me Mr. Vineet Patavari, who is the co-founder and CEO at Stockage and eLearn Markets. So now he is an accomplished entrepreneur and a startup founder with expertise in digital and growth marketing. He's a CA and an IIM Indore alum. Vineet has been a prolific speaker at many startup events and forums, including at institutions like IIMs and IITs to begin with. And he has also been recognized and honored for his achievements, received awards such as the BW Education 40 Under 40, Club of Achievers 2020, Indian Achievers Award 2020-22 for CEO of the Year, and many more. I think the list is endless if I have to begin with. So I'll just name a few. So, okay, I think enough on your introduction, Vineet. Otherwise, I could go on and on with respect to your college and achievements. But to begin with, I know I am a user of Stockage personally. I've been using it for a couple of years, and it gives me immense pride in stating that it's a company based out of Kolkata, where I am also based out of. And it's very rare that we find people, you know, based out of Kolkata doing something, you know, niche in the financial industry. So whenever I come across people who understand that I am someone who's deep into the industry, they always question, then why are you based out of Kolkata? So can you like walk us through your journey of how Stockage happened and, you know, what triggered that?
So thank you so much, Ami, for that, introduction. And since you ended at Calcutta, and that's the common point between us, see, it's always a pleasure to talk to someone who is from Calcutta. And I understand where you are coming from when you say that the perception of people outside Calcutta is, if you are building something sizable, they are always surprised that how can that be done through, done in a city like Calcutta. But let me, tell you that, it has been a wonderful journey in Calcutta building Stockage, which is now used by more than 3 million people, building eLearn Markets, which is again used by around 3 million registered users, right? So, Calcutta has always been a positive contributor in this journey, rather than creating any kind of hindrance, which people might have perception all about, right? And so I'm very grateful for the city, and any entrepreneur, fellow entrepreneur who might have just started or about to start, would love to help him in his journey. So since a lot of your listeners will be from Calcutta, let me extend this from my side, that anywhere you need my help, I'm in Calcutta Sector 5 and always available for any kind of discussion, support, help. Now coming to my journey. See, I'm a Calcutta boy. My schooling, college, all in Calcutta College from St. Xavier's. And CE also I pursued in Calcutta. For my MBA, a couple of years I went to Indore. Right. After that, I started a venture which was into online CAT preparation, so e-learning, in the year 2008. Probably it was a little too early to monetize e-learning, at that point of time. Worked on it for a couple of years. It developed very good traction. But, again, when you are from city like Calcutta, one thing which you miss on is probably the ecosystem. So, and at that point of time, this whole funding ecosystem probably was not this vibrant as it was there right now. Couldn't monetize it to a large extent. So again, jumped into a corporate job for a couple of years with CRISIL, which is the rating agency. But again, that entrepreneurship, that thrill to do something on your own was always there. And my college senior, Vivek Bajaj, was doing something in the world of finance, because that was his background. He is a hardcore trader, investor. So he wanted to do something in the finance domain, and I wanted to do something which was related to what I did earlier, which was e-learning. So together we started eLearn Markets in the year 2014, right? And we realized that financial learning, you know, and that's coming from our personal backgrounds also, to learn anything in markets was very complicated because there were very, selected trainers in the country, and those were also available only in cities like Mumbai, and, very, very expensive because of their being out of reach for most of the people. So we thought that in a country, growing country like India, it's absolutely essential for people to understand financial markets because that's where the financial wealth will be created, right? So without using technology, without being going digital, it's not possible to spread this to a large extent. So we started this digital platform called eLearn Markets, which, has been a marketplace for financial market learning with 300 plus market experts, hundreds of webinars, hundreds of courses on the platform, and multiple other ways of learning now available, which is now utilized by more than 3.5 million users. And then, we realized that learning is one part. But if you look at the overall journey of an individual in markets, the first segment or the first aspect is learning. But then you need to analyze based on your learning, which stock to invest in, which mutual fund to invest in, how to create your portfolio, what should be your portfolio location, and so on and so forth. So data information, is required. And for that, people had to really struggle because nowhere they had clean, useful, actionable data available. Right? There were platforms like Bloomberg, which were meant for institutional investors and were extremely expensive. So that's where we realized that we need to build a platform like Stockage, right? Which is the product we are talking about, right? Stockage we created to become Bloomberg for individual investors. So data in your, and it should be available on mobile because that's where the India was getting online more than web. So we created a mobile application back in 2016. So we went mobile first and then we, later we launched the web. So that's how, the journey began, just covered two parts. And then we realized that there are four more things which needs to be offered. And we kept on adding features and products to help in the corporate mission, which is to empower individual investors of India. So yeah, that's what we are doing.
Great. Absolutely love what you all do. I mean, I've had the fortune to meet Vinay Pagaria once, and I've really walked through the journey of what the app provides and, how useful that actually is for an investor to unlock the plethora of information that it provides. So it's an amazing work that you all do. And I personally am a huge fan and a premium member of the same. So yeah. Okay, moving on from your journey, I understand that, and I know for the fact that, you call yourself to be a CEO, right? But besides that, you also single-handedly manage a lot of other business verticals, be it marketing, be it HR, be it sales, finance, operations, and, the likes. So what does it take? What does it take to actually dive deep into such an enthusiastic, is it because of the baby that you created, be it Stockage or eLearn Markets, or is it a combination of your product plus the zeal to let India grow and just release this awareness amongst everyone?
See, whatever you wish to do, purpose is extremely important, right? So this purpose to empower individual investors, to democratize financial markets, to make it accessible and understandable for a larger mass. All of that drives us to do this. But I believe even more important than purpose is, your people with whom you work. Obviously, these people will be driven by the purpose, so they are all interconnected. But if you don't have the right set of people, your life will be a real struggle. So I'm thankful that I have a team of such individuals, right, who have been there, and this entire piece would not have been possible without them. So when you named all these verticals, obviously there are individuals who are driving them, right? And the good part is we learn from each other. The culture of learning is ingrained very, very deeply in our organization. And that has been my personal focus too, that any individual, maybe at the last level, whoever gets connected, should have enormous learning in the period he is attached with us. And that also helps us in, you know, retaining the team members. Because ultimately, see, money is one part, but everyone wants growth in his individual self also, right? And when the individual grows, the organization grows with that. So with that belief, I think, you know, the answer to your question is people in one word.
Great, great. So catching the word learning from your current answer and dissecting it to dissecting it a bit to another part of a conversation that I would like to lead us into would be, what are the current markets teaching us? What is that one learning that, you know, investors are looking forward to from this extreme volatile market situation that's panning out right now?
Yeah. So see, I will answer the question from my personal perspective. And I am a long-term investor. I don't trade, right? I don't get involved in any kind of speculation. So from long-term investing perspective, I believe this is an amazing time. We had such time in back in 2008 when the markets crashed post Lehman crisis. Now there are stocks which have corrected 30-40%, and I am a staunch believer of value with growth, or growth with value. So stocks which are growing are also available at decent valuations, right? Because the markets have corrected. So if you have a list of stocks, very high quality stocks identified, right, and you keep a watch in these markets, there will be days or weeks when your stocks will come to a level which is a very decent entry level into your stocks. So this should be used as an opportunity to accumulate, you know, the stocks in your list, your wish list. So I believe, yeah, volatility is there, right? Rather than getting scared by that, use it to your advantage. Keep a track of how the prices are moving, and you might not get the stocks, all the stock on the same day to buy, but different stocks or different stocks from different sectors, you know, get bitten down on different days. So it's an advantage for you from that perspective. But yeah, you should have your list of stocks ready, and you should be ready to get bitten down further, because to catch hold of the bottom is almost impossible. So don't, you know, say that I told you to get into the markets and you invested the entire sum in one go. So invest in a staggered manner. And I think it's a good time to build a long-term portfolio.
Right. But having said that, equity markets in the last 2 years have shown us everything. Like, it's been calm, it's been chaotic, and it's been a mix of the two. So you mentioned that, you know, have a list of stocks written down, have a few sectors in mind. Could you name a few sectors that are on your mind? I'm not asking you to name stocks that you are bullish upon or bearish upon. We'll have that disclaimer put out. But a few sectors from a macro perspective that you think you are bullish on, basically.
See, if I look at, you know, long-term thing, so one thing which I am very bullish on is, you know, is actually a little bit into the price, and that's the automobile, you know, because post pandemic, there has been a good surge, and we see it to be continually there. So stocks which are related to that theme. Secondly, you know, if you look at pharma has been bitten down quite a bit. Right. And we have been seeing revival in last couple of weeks. I believe from here on, we might have change of fortunes in pharma as well. So if these are the two stock, you know, sectors which are currently in my mind, but I believe more in going stock specific, right, and sector agnostic in most of the cases. So most of my analysis is bottom up. Yeah, there are some sectors where the money moves in. So those can be, you know, obviously you take for trying to keep your timing right, you need to see which sector is moving. So the answer might be different today and very different maybe 15 days later. So yeah, that's what it is.
Right.
Another sector, you know, which I feel is railways, stocks which are related to railways. Most of them will be on the PSU sides. But what is happening is there are schemes by government wherein more than, you know, all thousands of railway stations will be modernized. The railway telecommunication systems will be modernized. So enormous amount of investment is going into that. And the companies have a big pipeline of orders. So, you know, it's a good time to track railway stocks, railway related stocks, and some of them are available at good valuations too.
Right. So while we're discussing about railways, I'm parallelly, you know, reminded about airports. And when I think about airports in India, the one company that comes to my mind is Adani. And having said that, the Hindenburg report did disturb the entire Indian, you know, markets, the financial market system when the report came out with respect to the Adanis. In hindsight, when we think about it today, it did not disrupt it as much as Hindenburg did to other companies in the past. So what is your take on such reports that come out, A, and B, what is your take on the Adani Group?
Okay, so first thing regarding the report, okay. See, people have their vested interests and on all the sides, okay. So the report similarly had vested interests, but obviously I'm not saying the report was completely wrong or completely right. Okay.
Absolutely.
As investors, we need to understand what kind of stocks we are comfortable buying, what kind of stocks we are not comfortable buying. So if you talk, you know, I can talk about my personal self. I am never comfortable buying stocks which are at extremely high valuations. Right? What happens is when money chases assets, which people don't understand, you know, what happened, and or they have a huge sense of fear of missing out when there is a run up in certain stocks. So for example, Adani stocks had a huge run up, and what happens is once they have crossed that stage, it gets further accentuated because of the fear of missing out. New set of investor comes at the top. So my kind of value-driven investors are always scary of these kind of opportunities in the market. Obviously, you can make money out of this, but the skill sets required are very different to time the entry and exit. Plus, the chances of these kind of events, which you might call black swan event, or you know, are very the probability is much higher in stocks which are very, very highly valued, right? Very expensive stocks. So that's on the Adani Group side. Regarding the allegations made regarding whatever happened, right, and the entire fiasco, you know, if there is no fire, there's no smoke without fire, right? And there are a lot of things which are interconnected with politics of the country, right? So my take on that is always take away from the stocks which are, you know, which are complicated, right? Where there is any kind of corporate governance issues, possibilities, right? Obviously, we'll lose out on some money there. But if you want to create long-term wealth, you need to sacrifice that kind of thing. So there will be a lot of other opportunities which will keep coming in future. But you have to ensure that the kind of management you are investing in, the kind of sectors you are investing in, you understand them. And you know, you have big faith in them. Just because it's running up, there is momentum. If you invest in that, there are possibilities that the momentum might turn also.
Right. Well said, well put. You mentioned that, you know, you are a believer of growth with value investing, right? So on that, now as the investment landscape continues to evolve, many investors today are wondering if the recent market shifts that we are witnessing towards value investing, will they continue or we will soon, you know, see a return towards growth investing? Will FY 2023, with the end in FY 2023, will this shift happen soon? Or, you know, the sun is yet to rise over there.
See, you cannot be... So if your stance as an investor or if your thought process as an investor changed with the market conditions, right, then you are trying to be an opportunistic and not a stable investor, I think, right? Because what happens is you have to wait patiently when there is enormous amount of activity in the market, you know, during a bull phase, because you might be just sidelined and you're just waiting that my stocks will come at a correct valuation and they might not come. So being a value investor is nothing fancy. It's boring. it's very frustrating also at times, right? Because the stocks you buy at the lowest level, they go further down from there because the market conditions are not good. And when everyone is making money, probably you are not able to invest in those stocks. So that's number one. Number two, what will happen with the market? See, a lot of new entrants got into the market in last 2-3 years. As you said, COVID has shown us everything. Last 2-3 years, market have shown us everything. So a huge number of investors were new to the market. I'm not saying, you know, they are just youngsters who got into the market. No, even people who were never associated with markets because of financialization of savings, a lot of new entrants got into the market. And probably this is the first time they are seeing a real correction in the market, actual correction. So this will teach them a lot of things. And a lot of them will be actually thrown out of the market also, because the psyche to sustain this kind of market, right? Some of them will develop. Some of them will say, this is gamble. This is, you know, a useless place. We'll never come back to markets. But markets are not to be blamed. This is actually the right time to stay in the market and be resilient and learn things. But this doesn't happen like that. People will get out, and the people who will survive will stay put. I think they'll do good in long run.
Great. Okay, so while we're discussing about equities and, you know, what financialization during and post COVID happened, I'd also like to touch upon the fact that post COVID did not only encourage people to invest into equity markets, it also encouraged people to buy insurances for them or to save money and put it into other assets as well. So when you're talking about an ideal asset allocation with respect to today's times, what do you think that would be? Also, I understand that you mentioned that you cannot change your stance with respect to market opportunities. You cannot become a value investor today and a growth investor tomorrow. That cannot happen. That should not happen if you are a wise investor. But what has been happening and what I think even experienced fund managers are doing today is changing their market cap allocations, right? Say, for example, moving from large caps to mid caps during the COVID times, or today in today's time, moving away from mid and small cap, maybe investing in the right market cap allocation. So I would like to divide this question into two parts. One, what would the ideal asset allocation should be in today's times with respect to the major assets that exist today? And B, with respect to equities, what would be the ideal market cap allocation with respect to the next 2 or 3 years that you're looking at?
Okay, so the answer cannot be same for everyone, right? It will definitely vary based on the risk profile of the individual, the wealth profile of that individual, and so on. If I talk about myself, given my age, my income, etc., what I try to do is do a major allocation, around 75-80% of my allocation to equity. Okay, I don't want to delve into asset classes which I don't understand. For example, crypto, right? I don't understand crypto in terms of what is the asset behind it, what's the actual value behind it. I understand it for the speculation purpose, I understand, right? But other than that, what's the real value behind it? The day I'll understand, probably I'll start putting money over there. So 75%, let's say, gets into equity. The reason being, I have I can take more risk given my age, right? So that's number one. In terms of other 25%, what I feel, you know, so gold gives you a very good hedge against inflation. And especially in volatile markets, and especially in recessionary trends like this, gold obviously tends to outperform a lot of other asset classes. Obviously, real estate is one of the primary investment thing, but it's something which is locked. So I'm only talking about financial assets when I say 100%, 75% is equity. So not the physical assets, which includes, physical gold or physical real estate. I just feel people should have clear distinction. Physical assets, do it based on your need. But financial assets, which are more of a regular affair, more allocation towards equity. The rest can get into debt and, a mix of physical, digital gold, etc. So in terms of physical versus digital, I believe digital gold makes much more sense, especially the SGB, right? Because they give you a 2.5% returns. It's more tax efficient also, and so on. And within 75% equity, I do invest in mutual funds as well. But, you know, around 50% goes into a list of stocks. There are around 20 stocks. I keep evaluating that. One or two goes away, one or two keeps coming. So that's the kind of churn. But I try to maintain a list of 20. Anything above 20 becomes, you know, over diversification. That's what I believe. So yeah, that's more on the thing. And in terms of market cap allocation, see, that's purely dependent on your risk profile. So the reason you said, you know, people switching from one market cap to other category is basically what happens is in this kind of markets, when even the large caps are available at a decent valuations, people try to go towards that. And in volatility, what happens is the beta of small cap or mid cap for that matter is much higher compared to a large cap stock. So to create stability in your portfolio, you should have large cap stocks, definitely. Right. And it should be a fair mix based on your profile. See, if you are someone who's satisfied with an alpha of 2 to 3% on market, let's say market gives you 12, 13, 14% and you are happy with 16, 17, 18% CAGR, then even mutual funds are a good medium. Right. And you can select a good 10, 12 stocks, which are very high quality blue chip companies. Right. But if you need a higher alpha, then obviously you need to take higher risk. And that's where some small cap and micro cap, I would stay away from micro cap. And what I have seen, the reason for that is the risk reward ratio is never favorable. When they increases, obviously it gives you a very, a big high in terms of, you know, personally, you feel that I've done a great search, but actually when they fall, your wealth gets eroded very, very fast. So to avoid that, stick to very good small cap companies, if you can identify. Right. And you should have a mix of small cap, mid cap and large cap in your portfolio. I think becoming too heavy on either of that, if you are too heavy on large cap, probably you will have to sacrifice on growth. And if you're too heavy on small cap or mid cap, you will, stability in case of large cap. And in terms of small cap, you miss out on growth if you don't have adequate number of small cap stocks. So, but yeah, quality is extremely essential. High quality management is extremely essential, right? So if you figure out a small cap company with very high integrity of the management, because see, everything else you evaluate might be, you know, in accounting terms, we call window dressing, right? But the quality of the management somehow, if you can figure out through channel checks or through other mediums, I think that's the best way to identify good small cap companies.
Got it. So, and these channel checks are required not only when you are, you know, evaluating a company. I feel you should do your own compliance and due diligence when you're evaluating your own financial portfolio as well on a macro level. And having said that, a lot of people today confuse insurance with investment. That is where ULIPs are coming in. That is where a lot of people are not, you know, transgressing towards good insurances for themselves to protect themselves and their dependents, you know, in an unfortunate event. What is your take on that? And how do you see that ecosystem changing today?
See, I believe in last few years, the entire digital learning ecosystem, which includes YouTube and all the social media influencers, etc., have done some good work, which includes educating people on, you know, these differences. So for example, you know, a decade back, when we used to talk about term insurance, people used to say it's a waste of money because, you know, the money I'm paying, I'm never getting back. In today's world, because of this enhanced education, what is happening is people are understanding that this is pure insurance. If I mix either for ULIP or an endowment plan, then my returns are substantially lower, right? And it's not even beating inflation. So actually your money is getting deroded if you mix insurance and investment. So the worst mistake anyone can do is mix the two. The best thing is very simple. Buy a term insurance, pure term insurance, just to, you know, you can buy probably from two different companies so that your risk is a little hedged. At times what happens is if for some reason, one company is rejecting the claim for, you know, to the people who finally, after you are gone, so other company does. So that's number one. Second, you should have a health insurance, right? Because I have seen wealth getting wiped off of families because of some ailments, some problems, because the medical expenses are extremely high in our country. If you want good, this thing. So definitely you should have health insurance, and don't mix it with investments. That's what I wanted to say.
Right. So we discussed equities, we discussed insurance. Now, if we, you know, also when we're coming to financial budgeting of your personal self, there's also this very personal dilemma that people have. And it's been going viral these days on LinkedIn and, you know, other social media forums, where people are questioning whether you should buy a house or rent a house, you should buy a car or only drive in Ubers. So, and I think this is very subjective. It has a lot of emotions involved, but at the same time, there's some rationality that needs to be put in. While I am a firm believer of not buying a house, but renting a house, but the thought that I have today that, you know, what if the house that my dad has, the house that I'm living in today was not there, that spooks me. So it's a two-sided dilemma that people have today. What are your two cents on that?
See, if we try and evaluate everything on an Excel sheet, what you are saying makes sense, that go for rent, right? But there is one angle which is mostly not understood by these social media influencers, a lot of them, is basically the emotions behind owning certain assets. So in India, if you talk about a housewife 10, 15 years back, now also owning gold or jewelry, right, is an emotional asset. They never do it to sell or to see what value you gain, because it's bought for generations. Mm-hmm. Similarly, real estate is bought for generations to come. It gives you stability in your life. It actually creates wealth for you, which is stable, right? Any other asset class is not as stable as real estate, right? But if you are looking to sell it, buy it and sell it, then real estate is not the asset class, because the transaction cost is very, very huge. And with everything becoming, you know, you have stamp duty, registration cost and so on and so forth, it's almost, you know, out of question that you can make any money if you just buy real estate and sell within 2, 3, 4 years or 5 years time. It doesn't make sense. So, but that emotional angle is extremely important. I personally believe it also depends on the stages of your life, right? For a young chap who has just got out of college, right? For first 5, 10 years of his career, it's okay to rent a place and you know, become stable in the career before getting a taking a loan, taking a EMI, because that creates a burden in your mental. You have to be mentally free. So utilize that time for very high savings and investing that savings and creating a good corpus for your down payment, so that you don't have a high EMI burden, right? That will create wealth for you in future also, because you have low EMI, higher surplus to invest, right? So try to postpone that, but I don't think it is something which is permanently, you need not have any real estate or any car or anything, because it's not only about those Excel calculations. It's about, you know, your status. It's about your emotions. So you need to consider those also while taking any financial decisions.
Right. Talking about taking financial decisions and, you know, understanding them, I'll bring back Elon markets into the picture. I mean, I think that's the ideal principle that you had in mind when you started that you wanted to bring about financial awareness and inclusion in the society. So if you could dig deep into Elon markets as to what are the principles laid out, what are the structure, how is it structured out for the users, for the listeners, basically?
So in Elon markets, we made it very, very simple, that we realized that there are experts, right? And these experts are people like you and me, probably, who are trading full time, or who are full time investors, or who are very active in markets. They understand markets better than the normal folks. So what we wanted to do was create a platform where these experts can come and do their knowledge sharing, right? So that we learn from each other. It's not, we didn't want to make this entire subject theoretical. So say, for example, you want to understand how to identify fundamentally strong stocks, right? To do that, you need to look at the balance sheet, you need to look at the ratios, you need to look at the management quality, understand how a con call is conducted and how, what are the discussions you have there, how to pick up the right points, how to identify red flags in a company before investing, and so on and so forth. So to do these, you need someone who can mentor you, who can explain you the nitty-gritties of finance, because finance is in general complicated and the financial literacy in our school and college curriculum is extremely low. So we created a platform which has got experts, right? So our simple theory is learn from experts. That's all. So we are saying you learn any aspect of financial markets, be it trading or investing, trading in equity, cash market, FNO, currency, commodity, right? And investing, right? And then probably you want to use algo trading, you want to go value investing, all of that, all aspects are covered, because there are different experts who are following different strategies to trade or invest in markets. We got them here. We created small capsules called webinars, right? Where people, just share their strategies. So idea is, anyone who's attending this understands the basic. He wants to understand what's the strategy of, let's say, Charmi is a great investor. What's her strategy? So that shared. The other is, I don't understand anything about markets. So we created a lot of self-paced recorded content, right? So that people understand what's the market. Then we have live interactive sessions. People who want to go a little deeper, build expertise. So we have live interactive sessions with experts, which goes on for a month on weekends and all. So we created these three formats. Apart from that, we created enormous amount of content to explain each and every aspect of markets, starting from as basic as what's an exchange, what's equity, what's a stock, and so on. Similarly, on all aspects of finance, which includes your personal finance as well, all aspects of personal finance. So we created text-based content. We created a lot of free videos. Our YouTube channel is also very, very active. We are about to touch 1 million subscribers there also in Elon Markets. So the idea was to spread financial education, financial understanding of things, and then go a little specialized in trading and investing. So that's what we are doing in Elon Markets.
Great, great. Great initiative. Again, going back to where we started, I mentioned the list of awards that you've received, right? One of them was the Innovation Leadership Award. I just want to understand, what do you think that you are doing differently to be honored with that award? If you had like to sum it up in 30 seconds.
So it's difficult to explain, innovation, because innovation, I believe, is not something that tomorrow you do something which is not done yet in the world. It's basically giving, let's say if I'm talking about learning and I make it easy for you, right? Now, to make it easy, it has to be a mix of technology, because the UI, UX of the product, how do you take it, etc. It is mix of the technology, content which goes into it. And then the external support, which is required, the customer support, etc., right? A mix of all of that. And on top of that, how to create real value for money. So bringing in all these experts, right? So what I personally feel is, whatever we do, we try and make life easier for the investors, because it's a complicated world. Financial markets is a complicated world. So we do tons of things. So just to point out one thing, which you call innovative, it's difficult, right? But it's mix of everything which goes. So one innovation I'll tell you, small thing probably, is we have three products. One is e-learning, one is stock analytics, and the third one is a social investing kind of platform, which we call Stock It Social. So what we have done is deep integration of learning inside Stockage. So it makes when you are navigating through markets, you are digging deep into a particular stock, you are evaluating balance sheet, you are evaluating all the ratios, each and everything has knowledge integrated in it. we realized India, most of the people understand Hindi. So we created two versions of every learning video or every learning material, English and Hindi. Then we went into other regional languages also. So now what is happening is any other stock analytics platform is not so deeply integrated with learning material as Stockage. And that happened because we had eLearn Markets content. So it's if you look at the cost optimization, it was created for eLearn Markets used in Stockage. Now, when you look at a particular stock, you also want to understand what people are talking about it. You need validation. So what we do is from social, we pull all the communication which is happening around a particular stock and we show it in Stockage itself. So basically, to give you a 360 degree view of a stock,
yeah.
You know, so these integrations, these keeps building up. So, you know, these are some of the things which probably you can count on the innovation, but it goes on.
Right. Great, perfect. I think that's about it. And it's been a one hell of a journey with respect to a personal finance kind of a conversation with you. And I really appreciate the fact that we, within such a limited amount of time, we were able to cover everything, like from equities, insurance, real estate, and I mean, it's a wide range, and you know, it's a good thing that we were able to cover bits and parts of everything. I just like to end it with a signature rapid fire round, and I'll throw five words, okay?
Sure.
Beginning with education.
Practical.
Okay. Financial markets.
Stockage.
India.
Growth.
E-learn markets.
Financial learning.
Okay, and the last one being Vineet Patavri.
Perseverance.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so much, Vineet, for doing this. It's been an absolute honor to have you on the show, and I'm really delighted that you are a part of Economically Yours. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.